But by his shaming, the Rambam. The Rambam says that by his shaming, this is a famous, famous halach in the Rambam during the period of the Second Temple, Kishemalchu Yovan. Kishemalchu Yovan gozru v'zedos ha'yisrael, when the kings of Greece decreed decrees against the Jewish people, ubitlu datam, and they in fact tried to destroy Jewish religion. They didn't let them study Torah and do mitzvahs. Upashtu yadam bibimonam ubibnoteim. They stretched out their hands. They stole their money, stole their daughters. V'nichnasu lahechol. They went into the holy temple. Uparchsubo pratzos. And they breached it. V'timu hataharos. And they defiled, spiritual defilement of all that was pure. V'tzar lehem liyisrael ma'od mipineim. And it was extremely, extremely oppressive for the Jewish people to before them. Ulechotzum lachatz gadol. And they placed extreme pressures on the Jewish people. Ad sherichem alei malakei wateinu, until the God of our fathers had mercy upon them. Hoshiyom yadam, and saved them from their hands. V'yitzilom, and rescued the Jewish people. It was an extremely, extremely difficult period of time, and we Jews have been through extremely difficult periods. We're going to have to talk about the uniqueness of this period. The Rambam has, of course, described it. This was an assault, not only on Jews, but this was an assault on Judaism. And we'll see what a difference that's going to make. And there are going to be a number of aspects of the Yovan experience, the Greece experience, which singles it out and makes it different from all other suffering of the Jewish people. The Gavru b'nei Chashmonoi, HaKohanim HaGadolim, the sons of Chashmonoi, the high priests, waxed stronger, v'harogum, and they killed the enemy, v'oshim Yisrael mi'odom, and they saved Israel from their hands, v'hemidu melech min HaKohanim. And they appointed a king from the priests. Now what's fascinating over here is, anybody who knows a little bit of history, it was at least 25 years after the Chanukah events that a Hashmonoi became king. And the Rambam seems to, you know, put it all together as though it's one experience, but it wasn't so. Obviously, what the Rambam is saying is that since ultimately that's what happened, that was one of the defining aspects of this victory. Most probably what the Rambam means is that if we would not have fully taken the reins of government into our hands, there would not have been a complete salvation. The Rambam is saying that there was no way to make any accommodation with Greece, you know, arrive at some kind of an agreement with them. It was not the kind of thing where you call an international conference and we decide this will be Greek, this will be Jewish, this will be Jewish, this will be Greek. It didn't work. They understood that the only thing that would remove the yoke of Greece was the complete and total destruction of the Greek invader. The Chazra HaMalchus LeYisrael, and the Chamam, I always have this festive air about these words, Chazra HaMalchus LeYisrael, kingdom, return to Israel. Yet Ramatayim Shana Mof for more than 200 years, Acha Churban HaSheni, until the destruction of the Second Temple. Now, what's fascinating about what the Rambam is saying is that we know that the latter end of the Hasmonean dynasty was not something to be very proud of. The Hasmonean dynasty ended in civil war between two brothers, Hyrcanus and Aristobulus. I was going to use the word corrupt. It was corrupt, but then you're going to start making comparisons. We're not making any comparisons. We're talking about the Hashemites. They were corrupt. That's what the end was. And despite that, the Rambam says, no, there is great value to our being our own Balabhatim in this country. Even if the house of Chashmonai deteriorated in a terrible way. Kishugor Yisrael Aleyevein V'Yivdom, the second halach of the Rambam says, when the Israel grew stronger over their enemies and destroyed them, he says it, says it again, you see, he uses this in the halacha before he talked about harogum, they killed them, and now he says ibdum, destroyed them. No accommodation. There was no place for accommodation. Greece and Israel were two extremes, and never the two shall meet. It was Olympus and Yerushalayim cannot live together under one roof. When did it happen? It was on the 25th day, B'chafei B'chodesh Kislev, it was the 25th day of the month of Kislev, V'nichnasu L'Heichal, Jews entered the temple, V'lo Watsu Shemen Tohar B'Mikdash Al-Pach Echad, they found no pure oil except one jar, V'lo Hoyavo L'Hadag El-Yom Echad, V'vad, it had only enough to light for one day, V'idlikim Imenu Nego Samarocha Shmone Yamin, and they lit the candles for 8 days, Ashikashu, Zaysu, Otsim, Shem, and Torah, until they were able to grind and press new olives to bring new oil. Okay. We're going to learn a number of midrashim that are going to, in a sense, begin even more to define for us what took place at the time of the Greek invasion of Eretz Yisrael. Just a brief view. Remember, we are talking about the Second Temple. The First Temple was destroyed by the Babylonians. Jews went off into exile for a period of 7 years. Goes Bavel, the Babylonian exile. And then it was Zerubbabel and Ezra and Nehemiah who began the return in order to establish the Second Commonwealth, and they built the Second Beit HaMikdash. The return took place after the Babylonian Empire came to a crashing end before the forces of Persia. Parasumadai are the ones who removed Bavel from the scene of the world. Nothing is left of Bavel. Parasumadai, and of all things, Korash, king of Paras, is the one who made the great announcement, Mi Bachem, Mikol Amo, who is there amongst you from all of God's people that wants to go on Aliyah, Vashem, Imo, Vayal, God shall be with him and go up. He granted permission for Jews to go back to Eretz Yisrael. Is there? Our guy, this guy, was the first Nefesh B'Nefesh. He sent Jews, he sent them on Aliyah. He sent them. Of course, there are things that happened afterwards. There was an indigenous population that had remained in Eretz Yisrael that were had harbored great enmity for the Jewish people, the returnees. Greatness, you know, history repeats itself. Boy, does it repeat itself. All we have to do is just learn a little bit from this history that repeats itself. Anyway, they began, Ezra and Nehemiah began the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. They began to put up the walls around Yerushalayim. What was it, just a few days ago in the newspaper, they had finally found a section of the wall of the old city that had been built by Nehemiah. In Sefer Nehemiah, there's a beautiful, powerful description how one night, unbeknownst to anybody, Nehemiah takes a number of people and under the dark of night, they march all around Jerusalem and begin to lay out the plans for rebuilding the walls. And a wall of Nehemiah, can you imagine, a wall of Nehemiah is found. I mean, it simply tells me that the Pesukim in Tanakh are absolutely true, but most probably it's a kilometer away from here. Nehemiah's wall. So what followed Bavel, there were Jews throughout the world that were now under the heel of the Persian Empire. It wasn't all good, because there was a fellow, Ahasuerus, And a Haman who promulgated a gezeira decree laharag alhashmid la'abin to destroy all the Jewish people, and that was Nesef Purim. The Nesef Purim was at the beginning of the second end of Golos Babel, beginning of second Commonwealth. About 150 years into the period of the second Commonwealth, Jews were still a vassal state of the Persian Empire. When out comes a young man from Macedon, Alexander the Great, and becomes the great conqueror, he brings the Persian Empire crashing down to an end. So whatever was Persia now becomes Greece. And therefore Jews now are under the heel of Greece. Until, of course, the Hasmonaim, the revolt of the Hasmonaim against the Greeks, and until Hanukkah, Chof Hei Kislev, tonight in Yetz Hashem. Watch. Number two is a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Out came Hikom Aryeh Miyahar. Yirmiyahu says, therefore the lion of the forest struck them, Ze'ev Aravot Yishadadim, the wolf of the desert vanquishes them, Nomer Shoked Al Orehem. Nomer Shoked Al Orehem, a leopard who stalks their cities. Kolat Yotze Mihena, whoever is going to go out, Yitaref will be torn apart. Kirabu Pishayim, Otzmu Mishuoseim, for their sins are abundant and their waywardness is intense. The Medrash says the following. The second line, the Medrash, number three. Al King Hikam Aryeh Miyahar. There are three animals, there are three beasts that are mentioned in this pasuk: the lion, the wolf, and the leopard. The Medrash says, Al King Hikam Aryeh Miyahar, they were struck by the lion in the forest above him. That refers to the Babylonian exile. Ze'ev Aravot Yishadadim, the wolf of the desert, is that which robbed them and vanquished them. Zumadai. Madai, Persia, means Nomer Shoked Al Orehem, a leopard who stalks their cities. Zuyogam, that is Greece. Kol HaYotzei Mimena, whoever goes out of their cities, Yitaref, will be torn apart. Zu Edom. The next and final of the four exiles is the exile of Edom, which, as far as Chazal concerned, continues Ad HaYom Hazeh, and that is going to end only when the Olam of Shein Behar Tzion Lishpot Et Har Esav Haitam Hashem Tulcha. The saviors are going to go up to the Temple Mount, and from there, God is going to judge Esav, and the kingdom will be God's. Chazor Aves, Kedar Pishayim, Otzmo Mishubaisen, Chazay Aves, Varua, Harei Kinamar, Daniel, all of these three animals appear, these three beasts appear. Chayes Ruas, these three appear in a dream that Daniel sees. And it says, I saw and behold, afterwards came the leopard. Zo Yovam. Yovam Greece is the leopard. Shaitam Ma'medet B'gzeyoteha Va'omedet L'Yisrael. They stood up with their decrees against Israel and told Israel, Kitvu Al Kerem Ashor, write on the horn of the oxen, She'en Lochem Chelek La'olam Haba. You have no share in the world to come. We will see another medrash that will say, She'en lon chilek, you have no God, Israel. You have no God, Israel. What's so unique, I'll get to the end, and then we'll explain it all. There's something so unique about the exile of Greece. You know what's unique about it? It's the only exile that takes place in Eretz Israel. We would have thought that that's in a contradiction in terms. Exile means that you are sent off out of Eretz Israel as the Babylonians did, took Jews off in chain to Babylon. During the period of Paros and Madai, Jews are all over the world. But here, Jews are back in Eretz Yisrael, and they have a Beis HaMikdash. They have a holy temple. This you call Golus? What kind of a Golus is this? What it means is, therefore, there has to be something very unique about Golus Yavon, the exile of Yavon, that it becomes an exile even while Jews are in Eretz Yisrael. What does that mean? How does that happen? What's operating over here? Furthermore, you have to understand, they didn't destroy the Beis HaMikdash. They didn't want to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. No. Rome destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash. Babylon destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash. No. You can have your Beis HaMikdash. Well, you can have your Beis HaMikdash. The fact is that you can continue your lives. You know, you can have your sort of your state. The only thing is, what Yavon's intent is to empty it of its Jewishness. Forgive me, I'm going to read something that I picked up on the internet last night, because it's something that I don't understand. And I think it's very, very germane. You'll begin to understand what's Tutsutar. Here in the Jerusalem Post yesterday, there was this article, Abbas repeats rejection of Jewish state demand. I don't know, Fashtenish was Tutsutar. Israel claims that they want to be recognized as a Jewish state, mm-hmm. and they say, no, you can have Israel. You can't have a Jewish state. What do they want? What do they want? So I'll tell you what they want. I didn't understand. You know, there's nothing wrong with saying that we don't understand. And here is a statement, a fuller statement, and you'll see how absolutely apt it is to the story of Yavon. And then a lot of what's happening around us is all a repeat of the pre-Chanuk experience. It's going to be uncanny and amazing. And here is a statement by, this came from a sermon, not on the Mount, on the Temple Mount. A sermon that was given on the Temple Mount on November 23rd. Israel has already laid many obstacles in the negotiations prior to the conference, so it can shake off any kind of commitment in the future. Israel wants to be recognized as a Jewish state. Unfortunately, this request did not receive the appropriate attention from the Arab League and the Islamic Conference Organization. If this request is granted, you have to see it from their point of view. It's awesome. This is a Muslim imam speaking on the Temple Mount. If this request is granted and Israel is recognized as a Jewish state, then there will be no withdrawal to 1967 borders, no partition of Jerusalem, and no deportation of the Israeli settlers. They realize something that some of our people don't realize. If it's a Jewish state, then it's a Jewish state under Torah. If it's a Jewish state under Torah, then the land belongs to us. But he continues, this is a serious danger to the Palestinian people, and it confirms It confirms the Balfour Statement from 1917. This consolidates with the Zionist ideology and with the Bible that represents Palestine as the promised land and the Jews as the Jews' chosen nation of God. Israel's request to be recognized as a Jewish state confirms that they are a racist regime and speeds the immigration of Jews from around the world to Israel. It's unbelievable. They understand. They understand better than many of our people understand. It's unbelievable. They understand. If it's a Jewish state, then a Jewish state all the way. the Greeks were ready to have Jews living in Herzl, but not a Jewish state. They wanted to empty Eretz Israel and Jews of their Yiddishkeit. That's what they wanted. This was a Kulturkampf, a struggle between a pagan ideology, which was completely in conflict with Torah. They wanted to remove Torah. You can stay here. They didn't make concentration camps. They didn't kill Jews. They had no such interest at all. You can go back your lines. We're just going to empty it of the light of Torah, of the Yiddish Neshama. Ner Hashem Nishmas Odom. And we'll see the Midrashim describe Greece as a period of darkness. If you want to remove the light of Yiddishkeit, then you know what you are bringing? You are bringing darkness onto the land. There is a medrash that I don't have here, but it's a fascinating medrash. Or maybe I do have some. I don't know what the other side is. I didn't notice some of them. Watch. On the left-hand side, there's a medrash. Lo shalafti, v'lo shakatati. This is a pasuk in Iyov. Iyov says, I didn't rest. Second side. Lo shalafti, I didn't have peace from Esav. V'lo shakatati me Lavan, and things hadn't quieted down from Lavan. V'lo nachti, and I didn't rest from Dina. V'yavo rogez, and then came even further anger. Bo'alai rogzo shel Yosef. The anger and the terrible disruption of Yosef. There are four tzaras that Yaakov Avinu went through. Esav, Lavan, Dina, Yosef. Dina, the Medrash says, corresponds to the third of the four Galiot. Lavan is Aram, that's Babel. When he went to the house of Lavan, you know he was returning to the other side of the river, Mesopotamia. That's where Babel. Because of Esav, he runs there. Lo shakatati me Lavan. Lavan is Babel. Dina. Dina, the Medrash says, is Yavan. Because where did the whole Tzora of Dina take place? The only one that took place in Eretz Israel. In Eretz Israel. What did Shechem really want? Our daughters will marry your daughters. Your daughters will marry our daughters. We're going to live together. It's going to be one happy family. Now, on the one hand, Greece decreed against Brit Mila because Greece wanted, and this was their ultimate goal, to erase the differences between Jew and Greek. To erase the differences. They didn't want Bris Mila. They didn't want Shabbos that made Jews different. We've talked over the years about Rosh Chodesh, which I explained on a number of occasions. Rosh Chodesh represents the eternity of a Jewish people, a Torah people. They wanted to erase the differences. There is no specialty. There is no chosen people. If anything, the chosen people are Greece and Olympus. They wanted to erase that. Shechem and Hamor with Dina wanted to erase all differences. But you know what? They were ready to go one step further. If you're not going to stop circumcising, you know what? We will all circumcise so that we're all going to be the same and you're not going to be any different. So the Golos, the suffering of Dina, is a suffering that takes place in Eretz Yisrael. The essence of that suffering is to blur the differences between Jew and non-Jew. Klal Yisrael is going to be like all the nations of the world. That's what Greece wanted. That was the darkness. They wanted to suck out from the Jewish people whatever sense of difference there was and whatever light. They wanted to extinguish the light of Torah. What did the Rambam say? Bitlu dotam v'lohi nichrotam nasar v'tor v'mitzis. They didn't let them study Torah. That there should be an Israeli state? Yes. A Jewish state? Never. That will struggle with Greece. Let's look at the Medrash on the right-hand side. You know what the Medrash is talking about? The first, second pasuk in Torah, v'ha'aretz haita tohu v'vohu v'choshech al pnei tohom v'ruach elokim merachefet al pnei hamayim. Reb Shimon ben Lakish potar krariyo b'galuyot. That pasuk, that second pasuk in Torah, is a description of the exiles. V'ha'aretz haita tohu, ze golus badal tohu, the emptiness, that's badal. Shenema, Yirmiyahu says, when he takes a look at the destruction that Babel will bring, Ra'iti et ha'aretz, I've seen the earth, and it's, behold, it's told, it's emptiness. Bohu is golos madai, as it says, Vayavhil lahaviet halam. In haste they brought halam. The choshech, ze golos yavam. Choshech, darkness, that's golos yavam. That darkened the eyes of Israel with their decrees. Shaitau Medetlehem. Greece said to the Jewish people, Kitvar Kedem Ashur, write upon the on your oxen, on the shofar of your oxen, She'elechem Kelet Belekei Yisrael, that you have no portion of the God of Israel. The other medrash we learn that Einlam Chelet Lo Aval, no. They want Jews to reject Judaism. That's what Yovam was all about. Al Pnei Tahom, the pasuk goes on to say, at the depths, Zeh Golos Mamleches HaRasha, Edom, the present Golos in which we are in, last 2,000 years, this is referred to as Mamlechet HaRasha, the evil kingdom, She'en Lan Cheke Lo Tahom, the depths to which they will fall are so deep, there's no way to know. And of course, in 2,000 years of exile, we've seen the depth to which they can fall. But I have to I can't end the shiur without the good news. There's good news also. And the good news begins at the top of the page. Tipol aleihem, we say it every day in davening, it's in Oz Yosher. Tipol aleihem in matav v'facha, number four. Bring down upon them fear and trembling. Bigdol zrachol with your great arm, yidmu, they shall become silent like a stone, like a rock. The second half of the pasuk, this is the important half. Ad yavar amcha Hashem, ad yavar amzu kanita, until your people will cross over. Until your people, O God, will cross over. Ad Yavar, until they will cross over, Anzu Kanita, this people that you have acquired. What is this Yavar? Each Yavar, it says, crossing over into, twice in the pasuk, describe the two entries of Jews into Eretz Yisrael. In the days of Ezra, in the days of Yoshua, first conquest of the land, and the days of Ezra and Nehemiah. And the Gemara says the following, Tanya, Ad Yav, we learn, Ad Yav Aram Hashem Zu Biyar Rishona, until your people, God, comes over into the land. That's Biyar Rishona, the first time Jews entered the land, in the days of Yahushua. Ad Yav Aram Zu Kanita, until this people whom you have acquired will cross over, Zu Biyar Shnia, that's the second time Jews came into Eretz Yisrael. Mikan Anu Chachamim, from here our rabbi said, the two. The entry into Eretz Yisrael in the days of Yeshua, the entry in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah are both in the same pasuk, side by side. So the Gemara says that there is or there should be a similarity between them. And the similarity is Ru'uyim Hoyim Yisrael Lasot Lehem Nez B'Ezra, Kemoshe Nasol Lehem Nez B'Yoshua Ben Nun. Jews should have had miracles when they returned in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, as they had miracles when they entered in the days of Yeshua. What are you talking about? The River Jordan split. The walls of Jericho came tumbling down. The sun and the moon stopped in their tracks. We're talking about great miracles. But how did they come back in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah? Number one, it had to be with the permission, as we said earlier, it was the permission of Koresh, Melech Paras. And who came? 42,000 Jews came, the dredges of the Jewish society in Vavel, and about 8,000 animals. I've always said that those animals are holy animals, that the Torah tells us the animals that came on Aliyah, you understand, in order to establish the Second Commonwealth. It should have been with great miracles, because it says in the same pasuk, it should all come as a result of fear and trembling falling upon the nations of the world. Sin caused that the second entry into Eretz Israel was not with the same strength and might and grandeur and pomp and majesty and wondrous events as the first. What was the chait? The Marasha says the chait was that most of the Jews didn't come. If Jews would have come en masse, oy, second Beit HaMikdash would have remained forever. We made a mistake. Some people are making the same mistake today, but many, many Jews haven't made the same mistake. Many, many Jews have not made the same mistake. Here, Rav Huttner, Rav Yitzchak Huttner, at the Tzavik Lubavitch, says the following. One might read this Gemara as saying that, well, that's it. Second entry into Eretz Yisrael just was not like the first. That's it. The comparison does not exist. Gorom Achet. So he says, that's a mistake. He says, you know what the Gemara really means? It was delayed. Now watch. In other words, he says that the comparison between the two, the equation, first entry, second entry, is in force. But it's not going to happen as they enter Eretz Yisrael. It's going to happen sometime later in that history. And why? Why? So he says something that I remember, I learned it many years ago, and I had difficulty accepting it. That Zionist in me over there, I couldn't accept it. But I do now. He says the following. He seems like he's going off on a whole tangent that has nothing to do with anything. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. We say Shema Yisrael, so one would assume that this pasuk, which is Kabbalat Ol Malchus Shemayim, accepting upon ourselves the yoke of the heavenly God. Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim, that's the great Shema Yisrael. One could make the mistake of thinking that Shema Yisrael is the introduction. Hear, O Israel. Ah, now we're all going to accept upon ourselves the heavenly yoke. Hashem Elokeinu, we pronounce and announce to the whole world, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, God, our God, God is one. Here again he says, mistake. That's not true. Shema Yisrael is an integral part of Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shamayim. So he says, because there exists the possibility of the Rambam. Rambam says it. La'halacha. Rambam brings it into his tshuva. There is what is called a person who's poresh mitarkei tzibur. The Rambam says the following: somebody who separates himself in a sense, emotionally or otherwise, he separates himself from the community of Israel. Goes his own way. Does not act Jewish, think Jewish. Goes off on his own. The Rambam even says something very fascinating. Even if he never performs an doesn't do an Aveira. The guy doesn't do an Aveira. He eats Shmeitel Achomra, you understand? You know, Abu Mazen vegetables. Okay? But he just, no. He just is not part of the Jewish people. That person, even if he didn't do an Aveira, has simply stepped out of the Jewish people. You have a choice. You want to step out, you can step out. And here comes the part that I had great difficulty accepting, but I accept it now. And he says, you know what happens under those circumstances? A person who steps out of a relationship with the Jewish people loses his share in Eretz Yisrael. Because Eretz Yisrael was given to Klal Yisrael. It's not a gift to the individual. Eretz Yisrael was given to the Jewish people. You stepped out of the Jewish people, you lose your part. And what happens if there's a Jew who lives in Israel and will notify the whole world if somebody closed in a sukkah in Yehuda v'Shomron and God forbid Jews are building an Eretz Yisrael, he has stepped out of Klal Yisrael. If he steps out of Klal Yisrael, you know what he's doing? He has lost his share. What happens if you have a lot of people who are not part of Klal Yisrael and they've lost their share? Then we lose shticker. Because he says, Shema Yisrael, those two words are not the introduction to Kabbalah's Olmah Kushalayim. You know what Shema Yisrael is saying? I am a part of the Jewish people. I follow Darkei Tzibur. Klal Yisrael accepts upon themselves the yoke of God. I'm with them. The Shema Yisrael is a pledge of allegiance that I am an integral part of the Jewish people. And only that way can I accept upon myself, oh, Malach Hashemai. So I tell you, I found it difficult to, you know, that a Jew forfeits his chelik in Eretz Yisrael. That's what he says. If you separate yourself from the Jewish people, if you negate Judaism, if you are opposed to Yiddishkeit, you can be Jewish, but you've stepped out. You're out. And if you're out, you've lost your share. You've lost your share. Unfortunately, it's very painful for me to say it, but there are Jews like that in our midst, right here. Unfortunately, there are. We can't be blind. On the other side, there's good news. What was the report last week? That the growing number of people in Eretz Yisrael who identify themselves as religious or traditional, moving upward by leaps and bounds. I think that's where the Yeshua is going to come. One of these days, our secular leaders who are stepping out are all of a sudden going to find out that they are an extreme minority within a community of Jewish people that are saying Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Somebody brought us a book to read. A book. People have been bringing, you know, we get everything. I have enough pumpkin soup for China. Get to China. Yeah, okay. And that's a lot of pumpkin soup. But they're good. Everyone. Somebody brought us a book called Mikimi. Pumpkin soup. Mikimi. Mikimi is a book that was written by a woman by the name Noah Yaron Dayan.
She was one of the stars of the Tel Aviv, the nightlife. She had a program on radio TV. She was Donetsk. She became a Balas Tshuva. Not only Stana Balas Tshuva, Nachman Neoman Balas Tshuva. And she wrote a book called Mekimi. The book is absolutely powerful and amazing. And I've seen already that in the Chiloni world, they are giving it rave reviews. And we're talking about a book that's kosher from beginning to end, but is so full of such a... Only halfway through. Two-thirds of the way through, all of a sudden, she's begun to be swept into this love of Yiddishkeit. God, it's unbelievable. The end is the story of her wedding and her, not her parents and the rest of the family, they come to a dressed little wedding. They didn't know, but hit them. You know what they were? In Yiddish they'd say they felt like I give it in Sikka. That's very much, very good for Hanukkah, a Greek in the tabernacles. You heard that Yiddish expression, I give it in Sikka. But the power, I'm a tough guy, but I can admit that I was choked up and I cried through the last third of the book. There's a great deal going on beneath the surface and it's growing. But at the same time, one cannot deny that there are Jews who simply are a source of great harm to the Jewish people. In the world of literature, in the world of art, in film, it's unbelievable. So Rav Hudna says, they, Mekimi.
And the writer?
Noah Yaron Dayan. Right. So therefore, he says somebody who has stepped out of Klal Yisrael cannot say Shema Yisrael. Shema Yisrael is not the introduction to Kabbalah, to Omar, which I have accepted in the heavenly earth. Shema Yisrael is an expression that I am part of the Jewish people. I pledge allegiance to the Jewish people, and through that I am able to, together with all of them, accept upon myself the heavenly earth. Which brings him to the next step. And this next step here, not only, I always agreed with him, and I said it many years ago. I remember one day I was minding my business, you know, all sorts of things happen to me when I mind my own business in Har Nof. Somebody's driving by and somebody rolls up the window and say, Have I gold? It was that time of the year, you know, there's the Yom HaTzmaut time of the year, and then, you know, all mitzvahs become insignificant and unimportant. The only mitzvah is whether you say Hallel with a bracha or you say Tachnun and Kinnis with a bracha, you know, like God. We have to go through that every year. Okay. Anyway, so this person rolls down the window and says, Rabbi Gold, I was by the shir from Rabbi such and such, quite impressive rabbi. And he says, what are you talking about? When Ezra and Nehemiah came back, they didn't make a holiday. So it's what? Because a bunch of Tzionim came back there. It's so nice. You made a holiday. And I said, Oh no. You know what I said? And how they did? What are you talking about, Rabbi Kol? As soon as you didn't make an air. I said, No. Let me read you something. There's a big long speech in the Sefer Nehemiah. Long speech. By the way, part of this long speech that appears in the Nehemiah, we say in davening every day, Atu Hashem levadecho, Atu asisa v'shmai shmai shmai v'chol tzvom. This is a whole section that appears before Oz Yoshev. It's 30, 40 psuk in the speech. And this is made
at Rabbi Ezra at the establishment of the of the second Commonwealth. I mean, this is it. They're back in Eretz Yisrael. And he says, wow, the great miracles that God did. And then at the very end of it all, after all the great things God has done for us in history, finally, we made it back. Baruch Hashem, we're back. And then he says, Hine anachnu hayom avadim, we are slaves today. V'oretz Hashem osamto avuseinu, and the land that you gave to our fathers, Lechol et piria, to eat her fruit, that tuva her good. Hine anachnu avadim aleha. We're slaves here. Utvuasam arba, and all of the what grows in the fields, it goes to the kings who ashenotato lein, they could place on us. We're a vassal state. We're building a Beis HaMikdash. We're building the walls around Yerushalayim. But we are a vassal state of the Persian Empire, and we are slaves. Vaujviotenu moshlin, they rule over our bodies. Ubdehutenu, and our animals, they take kiditzonam as they wish. Ubitzora, gedola, anachnu. We're in terrible tsaras. Can you imagine? This is it. It's the dedication of the main stage one of the Beit HaMikdash, and the Jews are back, coming back, trickling back to Eretz Yisrael. Ubitzora, gedola, anachnu. What was the tsara? The tsara is that they didn't have independence. You know how long it took till they got independence? It took 150 years until the Chanukah story. And you know what they did as soon as they did get independence? No Greece, no Persia. They said Hallel not for one day, 8 days. Rav Hudna says, the equation, the first entry to Eretz Yisrael and the second entry to Eretz Yisrael, there should have been miracles when they came the second time as they were during the first, but it didn't happen because of the sin. So Rav Hudna says, no, don't think that just it never happened and there is no equation. The equation is in Torah and the equation exists. The only thing that happened is what it was delayed. Now, he didn't say what I said, but I'm saying that what he's saying must mean that. And he describes the equation as meaning that they entered Eretz Yisrael b'yad chamah in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, and they had to reach the point of yad chamah, strong hand, might and power. And you know what happened? He says it happened on Chanukah. On Chanukah, the equation is fulfilled. It was delayed. That's all it was. It was delayed, but ultimately it came. And I say, this is what I had said on that street in Har Nof. Sure, Ezra and Nehemiah didn't make a yontif with Hallel. Because avodim anachnu, we're slaves, they rule us, no independence. You can only make Hallel, say Hallel, with a bracha when you have achieved independence. And that happened, that Yad Hamad that Rav Hudna is talking about, happened 150 years later. Most probably, that's why the Rambam says the Chosra HaMalchus, the Yisrael kingdom, returned to Israel for more than 200 years, even though it didn't happen on Chanukah. It took another 25 years until they established the king, but the die was cast by this rebellion against Greece. Ultimately, that was what was going to happen. It had to happen, because they knew that there was no accommodation. There was no possible way of making some kind of a compromise that we will live side by side here in Eretz Yisrael, Rome, Greece, Greeks and Jews. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Just one more point. And with this I'm going to, and it takes us a few minutes over, I missed the Rishurim. Yeshayahu down at the bottom. Om ha'olchem b'choshech ro or gadol. The people that go in darkness saw great light. Yoshvi be'eres tzalmodos. Those who dwelled in the land of the shadow of death, light has shone upon them. Light has shone upon them.
I have a unique interpretation of this pasuk, and the interpretation of this pasuk is based on the Mesilat Yesharim. Mesilat Yesharim says that there are two kinds of darkness. Darkness creates an error in vision in one of two ways. The two kinds of darkness.
It's dark outside. It's night. There's no street light.
So somebody's walking, you know, he may see a telephone pole and think it's a man, or he sees a man and he thinks it's a telephone pole, can't see too clearly. It's dark. But he says there's a second kind of darkness, and that darkness, it is an intellectual one. If somebody, in his intellectual definitions of good and evil are all messed up, and he sees what's good as evil and what's evil as good, and unfortunately, we have a lot of people. In other words, we have a lot of people. Some months ago, I told Haaretz, stop sending me your paper. I can't take it. For some reason, they started sending it to me a week ago. And I read such anti-Semitism in there. It's unbelievable. We are guilty of everything. We Jews, we're guilty of everything. We're the SS. We are the conquerors. We are the worst of all. I read it every day. Because they see good as evil and evil as good. It's unbelievable. I read it. I'm getting ready to tell them again. Don't ever send it to me again. But there are Jews who push it, see things completely different than we do. And they have turned, because of the evil way in which they see things, they are living in an intellectual darkness. They live in an intellectual darkness by virtue of the fact that they think that we will be able to live side by side with enemies who want to destroy us. I don't understand, I go crazy, you know. Unfortunately, I had too much time in the last 3.5 weeks, you know. Couldn't concentrate that much on learning until last week. A week and a half, it got better. But I read and I see never so they wish to help people what's going on, this darkness. The first one, the one who's walking in the dark and he will mistake a man for a pole or a pole for a man, you know what you do? You put the lights on. You put the lights on and he'll see. But what about the person whose whole mind is darkened? Or is that a process? Or is that going to take time until the light will finally shine? Until you're able to train him to know you're making a mistake. There is a machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. According to Beit Shammai, tonight you light 8 candles. Tomorrow night, 7, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. According to Beit Hillel, you start with 1 tonight, and that's what we do, until by the end of Hanukkah, there are 8 candles. I say there's really no machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai is talking about the person who can't see what's going on because it's dark. You know what he needs? A burst of light. 8 candles. After he can start seeing, you can diminish it 8, 7, 6 till it's 1. Beit Hillel is talking about the one who's suffering from intellectual darkness. Oh, wait, that's going to be difficult. You start with 1 candle. Okay. Noch a candle. You have to take them through a process. I'm saying that's the machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. And then some years ago, I came across this pasuk in Yeshayahu. Ha'om ha'holchim b'choshech, a people going in darkness, row or gogol, they saw a great light. 8 candles, Beit Shammai, first night, because they're in the dark, they can't see.
then I'm sure what's ahead of them. Burst of light.
Yoshe Beretz, some of us, but people who are living intellectually in the valley of death, you understand, are so verzunken in verzunk, and their minds are in serious, serious trouble. Or Noga Alehem, the light began to shine upon them, little by little by little. The first half of the pasuk is talking about the physical darkness. You can take care of that. Oh, but the second one is talking about an intellectual darkness that is far, far more difficult. First half of the pasuk is Beis Shammai. Second half of the pasuk is Beis Hillel. So ultimately, yes, there's real darkness. There's real darkness that exists by Klal. We cannot and we dare not simply make believe that it doesn't exist. It does exist. And a lot of our sorrows are, of course, because of that. But ultimately, Pasuk says, that there is a promise from God that what he will do for us will be greater than anything that he did for our forefathers. And yet, Hashem, that's what we look forward to, that the neighbors of Hanukkah are going to put a light on the subject, and light into our mind. Hanukkah Sameach. I was going to say it just now, the Shugoyim. I think we should light an extra candle.